Okay, so October was a great month for Bitcoin, but we didn't manage to close above the all-time high on the monthly candle. But be that as it may, we still got an amazing 10% return in October. And from an ETF point of view, I think we got one of the biggest months ever. We got over $5 billion flowing into Bitcoin or Bitcoin-related ETFs. And this strengthens my thesis that we're about to go into the more aggressive part of the bull run. And if we do, we're probably going to get a massive, massive, massive move up very quickly. And that would make sense with the elections coming up. If we do get a Trump win like we thought, then we could get a massive move up in Bitcoin. Now, if this happens, it's super important that your portfolios have the right allocation that you and that your portfolios are ready for this. And generally, when I want to test my portfolio, what I do is I try and compare my portfolio to the biggest and the best VCs in the world. And so what I did this week was I sat down with two of my friends who are part of the biggest VCs in the world. One of them actually works for Peter Thiel's Founders Fund. Another one runs a company called Asymmetric. And so I sat down with them, and for the first time since I've known these guys, they actually opened up their wallets and showed me exactly what's inside. And let me tell you, I couldn't believe the tokens that these VCs were holding, especially the meme coin. So today's going to be a banger show. It's going to be one of our big, big, big shows. It was supposed to be our Friday banter, but we actually had an amazing Friday show yesterday, which there's a link below. You must watch that show. It's about how the stock markets could crash, funny enough. But you should watch it and make up your own minds. I want to take you into the VC's wallets in this show. So let's get going, guys. Talk about commitment, bringing you Friday shows, Saturday shows, and tomorrow we've got a meme show on Sunday. So I'm here every single day bringing you crypto love and crypto wisdom. If you like that, all I need you guys to do is to subscribe to this channel and smash the like button, obliterate the like button. This is going to be an amazing, amazing show. We're going to talk about everything. We're going to talk about the October close, which was a good close, but not the close that we anticipated. Specifically, if you look on the monthly candle, we're going to talk about the ETF inflows and how crazy these ETF inflows. And by the way, one of my guests today says, don't get excited by the ETF inflows because this is actually all a big scam and it's not really an indication that institutions are actually flying back into Bitcoin. So lots to discuss today. I want to remind you that these shows are actually brought to you by NordVPN. And as I said to you guys yesterday, I'm not going to convince you to buy a VPN anymore because I think I've tried and I've told you to keep your crypto safe. And if you want to keep your crypto safe, that's cool. I do just want to show you this if you didn't see it yesterday. This is a friend of mine, a real friend of mine. He got this link. He thought it was a link from Trust Wallet. And I said, he says, can it be a scam? I don't think so because it's from Trust Wallet. I said, it's a scam. Don't open it. Shit. First time in my life I've been scammed. I was like, no, please tell me you didn't click on this link. Please just tell me you didn't click on this link. Anyway, turns out that he did click on the link and he had been scammed. He thought that he was going to deposit $100,000 and get $10,000 back. He did it. And he lost $100,000, which is all the money that he's ever made in crypto. It took him 5 years to make. All of this could have been avoided if he had just taken Nord Threat Protection. Because what would have happened was a pop-up would have opened and said, don't open the site. It's a scam site. Now, Threat Protection costs let's just work out exactly how much Threat Protection costs. $5.29 a month. If he would have just paid $5.29 a month, he would have saved himself $100,000. Don't be like him. Go to the bottom of the show, click on the link on these links, get yourself a VPN and surf anonymously and get yourself threat protection and make sure that all these threats basically go away. Anyway, now with that out the way, I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get straight into the alpha of the show. And I think October was the biggest month for ETF inflows, some days with over or nearly $1 billion worth of inflows in one day. And I wonder if this is the beginning of a trend. And I think that's a good note to bring the guests in. I've got Joe and Joey. So don't get confused. One is Joe, one is Joey. Both amazing investors, amazing friends of the channel. I'm going to ask you, Joe, the ETF flows, huge momentum in the last couple of days. Is this an election thing or are we just picking up momentum in general with all the, you know, it's like slowly and then quickly?
Yeah, I mean, look, the reality is no one actually has any look-through attribution into the ETF flows, but you can kind of by proxy infer what's happening. So we've seen an enormous amount of inflow, particularly on BlackRock's IBIT. I think it was like something like, you know, 800 million yesterday alone, which was October 30th. The other thing, though, that you got to note is the CME's open interest on the Bitcoin futures product is also hitting new all-time highs. And so what this you can infer from this is institutional traders are likely putting on what's called a basis trade, where they end up shorting the future and buying the underlying. The underlying in this case being the ETF. So it's, you know, it's great for the narrative that we're seeing copious amounts of inflows. And there's no question that some of those inflows are people actually buying the ETF, likely because of Trump win in the presidential election. But you can't discount the fact that most institutional hedge funds that put on basis trades look to clear a hurdle of about 7% annualized. 7% is nothing coming from crypto, but in the traditional financial world, anything over 7% is really juicy. Right now, the annualized basis on Bitcoin is around 10%. And so if you're in a hedge fund with, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars under management, and you want to lever that position, you would short the CME future as well as long the underlying ETF and capture that basis. So yes, it is bullish on the kind of in the bigger picture, because there's no doubt that there's some, I would call, incremental flows into the space. But we can't take away from the idea that there's absolutely institutional traders putting on these basis trades. And the reason I point on the institutional side is because if you look at the funding rates for, you know, perpetual contracts on places like, you know, Binance and OKX and Deribit, et cetera, they're basically flat. There's no real leverage in what I would call like the crypto native degen traders, not currently anyway. So I think really a lot of this has to do with what's happening on the institutional side, which, by the way, that's positive, right? We're seeing more institutional interest in things like Bitcoin.
So you don't think this is related to people aping into the all-time high? Because I know retail loves aping into the all-time high. I think that you tweeted something this week and I tweeted something very similar. You tweeted that people all of a sudden started to call you. I took three calls on the day we were attacking the all-time high from people that I haven't spoken to since 2021, all saying, hey, you know, can we get back into Binance? So you don't think there's like this mass frenzy of people who are now worried that or basically thinking that this is going to go into price discovery and they're getting the exposure via the ETF?
Yeah, I mean, look, the old adage in any real market, particularly as you relate to like baby boomers and TradFi, is that, you know, if you loved it at like 65K, you're going to love it at 80K or 90K. What that means is there's always buyers higher, which intuitively doesn't make any sense. You would think people would want to buy something when it's lower. But the reality is it becomes this sort of self-reinforcing feedback loop. Assume we break new all-time highs, you know, before the election, after the election, all of the traditional financial media outlets like CNBC and Bloomberg and Fox Financial, they're all going to cover this. That then showcases to, you know, boomers and, you know, folks that may not have exposure to Bitcoin, whether through the ETF or otherwise, are looking at it going, oh, this is now, this has a lot of momentum behind it. I should probably now get in. That doesn't relate necessarily to like the degen crypto natives, where yes, most crypto natives are trying to front run that move. So, you know, on the one hand, we're right around all-time highs. I think we're like 4 or 5% off all-time highs as we sit here today. And I do think that there's a case to be made that as we kind of grind higher, I mean, we got really close days ago when Bitcoin was really moving towards all-time highs. I think once we kind of punch through that level, the market mechanics and dynamics and structure actually start to really play more so than, you know, the narrative. Meaning right now from the options markets, there's a significant amount of what we call gamma parked between 70 and 75K. And we're kind of in the belly of that right now. Gamma means that it's kind of the rate of change or the acceleration of the delta associated with the underlying options contract. If you're a dealer, meaning like, you know, a broker dealer, an OTC desk that, you know, we trade with at Asymmetric, they have to delta hedge those positions. And so as the gamma moves in one direction or the other, they're either having to buy more Bitcoin as the price moves up or sell it as it moves down. And so as we move through something like the 75K strike, that's when I think you're going to see real price discovery, at least up to 80K, where there's another big chunk of that gamma.
Okay. Joey, I want to bring the discussion to you. Like, how are you feeling about Bitcoin demand demand at the moment. To me, it feels like we're gaining momentum. Joe's cooled me down a little bit. Like, you know, he's put some perspective on what I was thinking. How are you feeling about the demand for the, for Bitcoin?
I think in absolute terms, I think especially as you know we get through the election, I think it's going to increase. I think pretty high odds that Trump wins. You know, the betting markets have him at like, you know, 65%, something like that. That sort of anecdotally feels about right to me. And I think a lot of people are going to kind of follow on to that trade, thinking that there's going to be, you know, kind of an exuberant bull market post Trump win. I think on a relative basis, my view is we're probably getting pretty close to, you know, kind of the Bitcoin dominance top, you know, probably sometime, you know, anywhere from like maybe today all the way to kind of early next year or year end. And so I'm kind of, you know, started to position more into alts for the next part of the cycle.
So I want to break it up into two parts. So the polls do show Trump with an overwhelming lead, but I've also learned that nothing's over until the fat lady sings. Although I must say, I think Trump and Trump's marketing, specifically around the garbage truck and McDonald's. And I think this year he seems to have won the hearts of the Americans. But I also read this, and I mean, it got me really thinking in terms of what Trump is actually running against. It says Trump is no longer running against Harris. She has been defeated. Trump is running against the election fraud machine or the election fraud. Now, this has been spoken about a lot. How real is this? How real is this election fraud problem? Could this steal the election?
I mean, anything's possible, but look, I think it is intellectually dishonest to assume that there's zero instances of election fraud in U.S. politics.
But is there significant right, election fraud enough to sway?
Or significant? I don't think so. However, there, you know, I think this lends itself to a larger problem as to how people are actually getting their information. Right. So it turns out that I saw this stat yesterday that folks that lean Republican or identify as Republican on Twitter gain significantly more followers and more engagement than those that, identify or kind of fit the mold of a Democrat. In mainstream media, minus Fox News, it's all clearly positioned towards Democrats. And so if folks get their information from MSNBC and CNN, they likely are getting fed information that suggests to them there's no election fraud. If you are watching Fox News and also getting your information from Twitter, you're very much of the belief that there's election fraud. The reality is the trust in institutions has been breaking down for the past two decades. The trust in media is at all-time lows. No one actually really believes mainstream media anymore. So let's assume there was unequivocal evidence of election fraud. Who's going to believe it? Because it depends on where you're getting that information from. So yes, there's been these videos that have come out of Allentown, Pennsylvania that are very disturbing for our democracy here in the United States. I have no idea if it's actually true or not.
I think it's normal. I've got to be honest. I really think that those kind of election videos with like the one ballot box burning, the one post-in box burning, I think that's normal. I think the part that I'm more concerned about is no voter ID and how that's going to play out. But I guess it sounds to me like you're both factoring in a Trump win, like an overwhelming Trump win. Am I right in saying that?
I mean, from my perspective, as we sit here today, it feels like Trump's going to win. Now, I've talked about this on a number of other podcasts and interviews, and the reason I believe that more strongly now than a few weeks ago, I mean, up until about two and a half weeks ago, I was convinced this was still a coin flip. The difference is I basically discount polls to zero. I give a premium to markets.
Betting markets.
Because just markets in general, I'll get to that. There's prediction markets, betting markets, then there's capital markets. Okay. Mm-hmm. So polls can be biased. Someone is sitting at home at dinner, having, you know, dinner with their family, and they get a phone call and somebody asks them, who are you voting for president? Like, they could just lie. There's no downside in them actually being, dishonest. Whereas if you're putting literal money to work, you have something to lose. And that could be in a prediction market, but more importantly, look at the capital markets. So for example, DJT, the Donald Trump's Truth Social stock, absolutely ripping. I mean, it's pulling back today pretty significantly, but it's been up like whatever, 150% in the past few weeks. If you look at the bond market, the long end of the yield curve, which is the 30-year bond, that interest rate has been rising. So meaning the interest you pay get paid for holding that 30-year bond is higher. Why? Because the belief is that Trump will run higher deficits than Harris. And so people that are buying 30-year bonds are requiring the market to pay them higher interest to fund those deficits. Finally, if you look at Goldman Sachs' prime book, if you look at Morgan Stanley's basket of Democrat winners and Republican winners, they've created these baskets of stocks based on the outcome of the election. It is clearly one-sided to Republicans at this point. So I look at the markets, not polls, not what you're seeing on Twitter, not what you're seeing on the news. What are the markets telling you? Right now, the market is implying that there's a Trump win.
Okay. So, I mean, how much of that is going to be a sell the news event, Joey? Like if Trump wins, do you think there's going to be a sell the news event? Do you think a Trump win is too priced into the markets?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. And here's why. In 2016, the narrative was if Trump wins the elections, the markets are going to crash. The markets went straight up after he won. Yeah. And here's why. Markets like certainty. Right now, we have a bit of uncertainty until the election is over. Now, yes, we could go into a constitutional crisis where, you know, maybe somebody, either candidate doesn't believe that the results were correct, and then you have to take it to the courts, et cetera. But there is an enormous amount of capital in traditional finance right now that is waiting to be deployed post-election. The economic data that came out this morning is extremely strong for the U.S. economy. There's no issue per se as it relates to the U.S. economy right now, and folks are actually underweight equities. Well, some of that's going to bleed into, you know, things like digital assets. So I'm not of the belief that, oh, you know, Trump wins, all of a sudden we're going to get a, you know, 5% pullback in the S&P and a 10% pullback in Bitcoin. If Harris wins, I think you will see a pullback in Bitcoin.
Joey, what do you think? If Trump wins?
Yeah. I think another way to think about it and kind of, you know, reach a similar conclusion is if you look at sort of the implied probabilities for a Trump win, right? You know, 64%, 65%, you know, that sort of definitionally means it's not 100% priced in, and markets think, you know, probabilistically. And, you know, there are, you know, obviously asset managers who are kind of pricing in as if there's 100% Trump win, but there's also people who are taking the other side. And so the market kind of currently has him as 65%. And so, you know, after he wins, you know, if assuming he wins, that goes to 100%. And so asset prices, you know, I think would go up to reflect that, or any asset that is, you know, correlated to Trump winning, that is.
So what you're saying is, I think what you're both saying, you're both coming to the same conclusion. Trump wins, massive pump. Kamala wins, slight pullback. If Kamala wins, what happens in the next 12 months for Bitcoin slash crypto? And I asked the questions differently. So what happens to Bitcoin? What happens to crypto in the next 12 months if Kamala lands up winning? Joey, I'm going to start with you this time, sir.
Yeah, so I think you know, Kamala win for Bitcoin is, it's still probably positive for Bitcoin, just because if you look at, you know, the Democrats historically, they've sort of been anti other areas of crypto, you know, minus Bitcoin, and then on Bitcoin their approach has sort of been to, you know, sort of tolerate it, you know, like large swaths of like DeFi and stuff, like they really wish this wouldn't exist. Bitcoin, you know, the sort of cat's out of the bag, toothpaste out of the tube. There's sort of no going back there. I do think though, even if Kamala wins, so there'll probably be some sort of pullback in the market, but I do think eventually there will be some sort of law passed by Congress. There's like a bipartisan bill that has, you know, it already passed the House, I think. And then in the Senate, Schumer supports it, but he never brought it to a vote because it was very clear that, you know, Biden would veto it because Elizabeth Warren hates crypto so much. So if you look at Kamala, you know, she's not really friends with Elizabeth Warren. They kind of have a rivalry, and like small, like tiny things that sound stupid like that actually matter. Like it's sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of thing. I think if you kind of assume that if Schumer wants to pass a bill, she wouldn't veto it, you could actually see an environment where, like, I think regardless of what happens in the election, it's more positive for crypto than like the counterfactual where Biden was president in another 4 years. But I think in the Harris scenario, it takes longer to play out because the market will want to actually like see it actually happen to believe it. Versus if Trump wins, you know, the market's just going to kind of assume that it's sort of, you know, open season for free markets, which is I think what, you know, what happens if he wins.
Joe, do you agree? I think I see you nodding. I take it you're nodding in agreement, right?
Yeah, I mean, I more or less agree with Joey. I think the way that I kind of view it is no matter who wins the election, and I've been saying this for months, look, it doesn't matter, frankly, who wins the election as it relates to Bitcoin. Both candidates are going to continue driving high deficits. That is bullish Bitcoin longer term. I mean, it's bullish gold as well, right? I think
gold's at all-time highs. Gold is at all-time highs.
I mean, maybe with Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan, somebody came out this morning and said they have a new price target on gold of $41.75, right? So, you know, Bitcoin is lagging as of basically the end of February. If you just take that snapshot from March to today, Bitcoin is dramatically underperforming gold. Typically, it runs with a positive correlation. And so there's going to be some level of catch-up. But here's why I don't think it matters who wins. The deficits are one thing. The direction is the same, meaning Bitcoin's going to higher prices, right? You've got all of the narrative from like, you know, the post-halving, all the fractal, you know, TA that goes around it and the kind of groupthink that goes into that. But the speed of that vector, right? So a vector is speed and direction. The direction is the same. What's the speed? The speed under a Harris administration is slower. The speed under a Trump administration is way faster.
Got it.
As it relates to crypto more broadly, yes, I agree with Joey. There's a lot of, even though it is very clear that the Republicans are trying to lead on a comprehensive regulatory framework as it relates to Bitcoin and crypto in the United States, not just from, say, the strategic asset reserve for Bitcoin, but also providing entrepreneurs and frankly, investors like me and Joey, clarity on how to actually build Web3 related companies in the US. The Harris administration has effectively said nothing, and they've said nothing on policy. And the reason that's the case is that the Harris campaign has a very easy task for trying to get her elected. And that's to simply say, I'm not Trump. She doesn't have to list any policies. Now, if you go inside the Beltway in DC, there's a lot of bipartisan support for things like the stablecoin bill. The banking lobby, which is one of the most powerful lobbies in DC, is very much against SAB 121. Yeah. And large Democratic donors to the Harris campaign have made it very clear that they don't want Gary Gensler running the SEC anymore. Now, this is all conjecture and speculation at this point. I find it hard to believe that we're going to have another 4 years, to Joey's point, of what the Biden administration has brought forth as it relates to, you know, crypto regulation.
All right, got it. So, I mean, I want to still carry on talking about a potential Trump win, and I specifically want to talk about this chart over here, which is the Bitcoin dominance chart, because I think we all believe that Bitcoin's going to continue to run, but everyone here is an altcoin degen at heart. We've hit the key level. I think even the big skeptics were all talking about the 60% key level. Ben Cowen was, you know, famously called it a long time ago. If Trump wins the election, how quickly do you see the Bitcoin dominance turning, and how quickly do you guys see the Bitcoin dominance starting to trend downwards? Because I think Trump's going to be much more favorable to meme coins, to altcoins, not meme and meme coins, but much more altcoins, right? Joey, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think over a number of months, I think it's kind of, you know, bearish for Bitcoin dominance. I do think like right after the win, you know, in those initial weeks, like it doesn't take like that many massive capital allocators to buy really big Bitcoin positions, because they're, you know, basically trying to get, you know, a higher beta version of gold, and they think that, you know, there is going to be all this spending and that Trump's going to be, you know, positive for that to like, you know, cause the Bitcoin dominance run to last a bit longer than maybe we think. But I do think kind of, you know, over the course of the next year, like I'm definitely positioned, you know, very, very long alts at this point, relative to Bitcoin. You know, I think it's one of those things where like, when once did Bitcoin you, crosses the all-time high.
When did you start positioning yourself more aggressively into alts? Like, have you been mainly Bitcoin up until now, or has this been a position that you've adopted for the whole cycle?
No, more like, you know, 2023, I was very heavy like Bitcoin and some ETH, and then you know, this year, I would say kind of like summer, when the market was very, very bearish, that's when I started rotating into alts. I mean, it wasn't the right trade. It's still a bit early, I think. You know, obviously Bitcoin dominance has continued to rise since then. But I do think that like we're gonna get back to an environment where alts outperform. I don't really believe the narrative that like, you know, this time is different and you know, there's not gonna be this like beta chasing effect, you know, post Bitcoin all time high. I think it'll happen again.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Joe, what do you think? You think we're getting an alt season soon? Or at least a drop in the Bitcoin dominance?
So I agree and somewhat disagree with Joey in various ways. So I do think that there is going to be a moment where Bitcoin dominance tops out and there will be a very violent rotation into alts. But where I disagree is I don't think that moment is now. And the reason I suggest that is Bitcoin dominance should have been rejected around the 60% mark. We're just over 60% now. And the last time we had, you know, a bull run into, you know, basically call it, you know, the beginning of the bull run in 2020, we actually topped out around like 73% dominance in Bitcoin. And then you got a run on alts. Everybody remembers 2021, how crazy that was, right? So, you know, we track this chart intensely, and from a technical analysis perspective, it's basically breaking out where it should be getting rejected. The other reason I don't think necessarily that right now is the perfect, I mean, we have exposure to alts clearly, but we're still pretty heavyweight Bitcoin through a lot of options contracts because we can get more, you know, juice on the upside if we're right. The beauty of kind of where we sit right now is that, again, if Trump wins, we think Bitcoin goes quickly to 100,000.
Define quickly?
Before the end of the year.
Okay.
And here's why. Okay. So the largest amount of open interest for options contracts that expire at the end of the year, so call it like December 27th, is actually the specific date, is at the $100,000 strike. And so if number one, Trump wins and we actually break through all time highs, now you're in a price discovery mode. 100K feels like a magnet. And that that kind of gravitational or magnetic pull towards the 100K strike is just an obvious target. Moreover, it's a massive psychological level because it's the first time that we have a six-figure Bitcoin price. So does that mean that alts are going to outperform Bitcoin in that type of an environment? I mean, possibly. I've been wrong before, but I just don't see that happening until Bitcoin reaches some level that you're going to see a lot of profit taking and selling. Now, the other thing to consider here is that if there's what's called a red sweep in the United States, so this is Trump wins and Republicans win the House and Senate. This is a lower probability outcome, but it is possible. And so I think as a risk manager, you have to, you know, anticipate something like this. If there is a red sweep, there's a non-zero chance this thing goes to 150K by the end of the year because it is so clearly bullish Bitcoin, given how Senator Loomis and the Trump election team has laid out very specific plans for what they're going to do the first 100 days of him being in office as it relates to Bitcoin, including a strategic Bitcoin reserve, where currently they're looking at owning 5% of the Bitcoin supply and buying that over 5 years. Everybody will front run that trade. And this is why I look at it and go, if there's a Trump win, if there's a red sweep, I find it difficult for the next 2 months to see Bitcoin dominance topping until it gets closer to that kind of 72, 73% level.
Okay, got you. So, I mean, so you're saying that you need a psychological barrier or something. You need some kind of psychological barrier for Bitcoin to turn or for people to get a little bit less warm on Bitcoin and into alts. How do you position your capital until then? So if you're like in a Bitcoin versus alt spread, what percentage of your capital right now would be in alts? And then how does that change as you get closer to the 100,000?
Yeah, I mean, look, like we trade a lot of derivatives and options at Asymmetrics. So, you know, I don't want people to think I'm just like buying and holding these coins. It's just not how we manage risk.
Yeah, yeah.
We have what we call what's called options adjusted delta. So what that is like if you buy an options contract, the underlying delta is the actual asset, in this case, Bitcoin. So the options contracts, as they move up in price and we go through our strikes and these options are in the money, it's as if we're long the underlying asset.
Yes.
And so our options adjusted delta across our entire portfolio currently is heavily skewed towards Bitcoin, probably by about 60 to 65%. The rest of that is in things like Solana and then the longer tail of tokens that we actually end up holding. And by the way, like we could change our opinion on this when we end this call, right? Depending on new information. Part of the reason that we're positioned that way is, again, our view is 100K acts as a magnet if Trump wins. We want to be max long our options adjusted delta so that as we blow through our strikes, we're very, very long Bitcoin. And the alts will ultimately catch up as well.
Okay, so then the big question is, in terms of alts, which alts? And this is the part I think that everybody's been waiting for. So, Joey, you told us you pivoted more towards altcoins from Bitcoin. Walk us through like the narratives and the coins that you went for. Did you go into ETH? Did you go into Solana? I mean, I know a long time ago you were quite a strong ETH person. How are you feeling today about ETH?
Yeah, I mean, ETH definitely gotten beat up. I still own a good amount of ETH. I do own some Solana. I think it's like maybe, I think a quarter of the size of my ETH position.
Why are you holding on to your ETH? So what are you holding on to your ETH for? And the reason why I ask is because Joe holds zero ETH. I know he holds zero. He hates the ETH trade.
I know.
And so I'm very keen to hear what both sides of the story here. Why not just go all into Sol? Why not just sell your ETH bag, go into Sol, cut the emotional attachment? What are you holding on for?
Well, I think like if you look at Ethereum, and you look at kind of, you know, like the early stage venture market, like there are still a lot of really great founders and teams building on Ethereum. I think the problem for why it's underperformed so much has a lot to do with both narrative and then also, you know, the way they kind of created the fee market around layer two blob space. I think it basically like really undercut how much they should be charging layer twos. And I actually like remember this like from when I invested in Arbitrum back when I was at Pantera. Like no one thought L2s would be this like super, super high margin protocol business. Like that wasn't the thinking. The thinking was that, you know, because of the fact that you're saving on not having to pay for, you know, coin issuance to pay for a separate proof of stake network, you actually pay a majority of the value to the ETH layer one. And I do think ETH could be charging these L2s more because the counterfactual, like the alternative option they have is to launch their own layer one. And that's like very expensive. The issuance, you know, cost of that is quite high. The same part, it's like they just kind of got the economics wrong. There's a bunch of proposals to actually fix that. Like some of them actually have pretty widespread support. I think we'll see one or two of those get in.
So wait, just one sec. On Ethereum, so. I know there's a lot of proposals, but one man's gain is another man's loss here. So if the ETH gains, the L2s lose here, right? So you're effectively saying if ETH raises the fees, the L2s land up losing here. I suspect the L2s and the parties around the L2s also have quite a big vote, you know, if in a voting process. You think that that who's more powerful, the ETH core layer or the L2 layer kind of thing? Because the whole business of ETH is in the L2s now. And if you raise the fees and the L2s become unhappy, then, you know, it becomes a bit like, you know, is this the smartest move?
Yeah, I think you can raise the fees as long as it's still meaningfully below the cost they would incur to launch their own L1. Like, because then the incentives are relatively aligned. You obviously can't just like jack the fees up like and charge some massive tax on the L2s, but you can definitely charge a lot more than you're currently charging. And I actually think that the kind of market dynamic problem that this has created is actually it's bad for both ETH and the L2s. Like, it's not as if like the L2 market caps of like Optimism and Arbitrum have all of a sudden like massively pumped or something because everyone noticed this economic problem where like, you know, a lot of the common criticism of ETH is like, oh, all the value is just going to the L2s and the L2s are going to capture all the value. But like the market's not even reflecting that. Like this narrative problem has actually just been bearish for everything touching it, like ETH, the L2s themselves, that sort of thing. And so I think my view is basically that this will get fixed in the next hard fork. And we're sort of kind of at a very, very negative point for ETH sentiment, which is why I still hold.
So are you taking the contrarian trade now? Would you be buying ETH and ETH betas? Like, would you say, look, Solana is the heated trade at the moment. Solana is the overcrowded trade at the moment. Possibly the better trade is to go into ETH and ETH betas.
I think it's like a different risk adjusted trade. Like I still own Solana because I think it's going to see a big kind of like beta driven outperformance. Like it's a simpler narrative to understand, which is I think part of why people like it. If you think about, imagine you're someone who knows nothing about crypto, you kind of just like, oh, I'll buy some Bitcoin, I'll buy some Solana. If smart contract stuff works out, I own Solana. And so it's a very, very simple narrative. But I do own a good amount of ETH beta, like in terms of things like Uniswap. You know, it's sort of kind of market dominant decentralized exchange. You know, they're launching like their own layer two. And so I think like some of this kind of high quality stuff, I think we'll see a resurgence. The other one that I put a position on, you know, earlier this year is like Aave, which has actually done pretty well. You know, so, and then I also own some stuff that's much more, you know, degenerate than that. Like I own a pretty big Doge position. Like it's a meaningful single digit percentage of my net worth. I think it's just like, it's especially with like the Elon Doge department and stuff, like there's a lot of narrative stuff where it's like, you can kind of sit in an ivory tower and say that stuff is dumb, but also it's sort of the classic trading line of like, do you want to be right or do you want to make money? And I think like, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if you're trading, the goal is to make a return, not to, you know, get too ideological about it. So I also,
I want to know more about your degenerate stuff. So Doge is your degenerate stuff. What else is degenerate in your bag?
I also own like some PayPay. It's kind of the
bro, you've come to the other side. You're a meme coin degen.
It's also easier. I mean, I know Joe is, you know, his returns are just so good. He's been able to do this out of his fund. But you know, it's also easier on the PA side when there's nobody you need to convince or talk to, and you're never going to get a call from someone because it's just yourself, the only person to. You know,
okay, so hold on. Okay, so hold on. Let's just slow down a bit. So ETH, Uniswap, Aave, Pepe, Doge. Give me more, bro. Give me more. This is, you know, I've interviewed you since 2017 and I've never heard you talking about your old bags like this. So this is like my heart's racing here, bro. My heart's racing. My Garmin watch can't keep up.
What else? I mean, I also own like on the really degen also, I mean, I also own like some, you know, whiff, some dog with hat. It's sort of, you know, similar thing, but for Solana. And then I think the other one that, you know, you might not have expected is like, I put on a pretty good size, like Phantom, like FTM. They actually like rebranded recently, but a position in that earlier this year.
Is that because because you like Andre or because you like the technology behind Sonic or why did you, Phantom is resilient. Why did you take the bet?
So basically the reason I took that is there's a bunch of these like, you know, kind of more scalable L2 stuff in the private markets, but FTM was like trading pretty cheaply. You know, Andre's smart, the tech is real. And then I like the fact that they basically created this way where it's sort of like an L1, but they also have like this trustless bridge to Ethereum, which, you know, sort of also makes it an L2.
Yes.
You know, who knows like whether they can actually get users and adoption and stuff. I think that's kind of the second, you know, part of the question, but for the initial part of the trade, it's just like, you have to believe that they actually ship it and that the tech works. And that's, you know, I sort of dug into it a bunch earlier this year and got confidence around that. So that's why I built up that position.
All right. So we've got Phantom, we got Whiff, we've got Doge, we've got Pepe, we've got Uniswap, we've got ETH. Joe McCann, so I'm coming to you because now you've got to top this list. So I know you're a Solana degen. So let's just tick Solana off and say you're the most bullish you've ever been on any coin ever around Solana. Now take me into your more degen bag. So.
Sure. So,
I'm so excited. Look, you know, I got to just say, it's been 7 years I've been interviewing Joey, and I even went to his offices at in Silicon Valley at was it Pantera or when it was, and I've never heard this before. Like, this is like my heart's racing, my Garmin's like beeping, it's telling me to like, calm down, take a deep breath.
I mean, the water's warm. You just got to get in. You
know? Get in, bro. Get in, bro.
Yeah, look, so, you know, I'll just talk about meme coins because there, if you look at like on an absolute return basis year to date, the meme coin basket or the index is outperforming everything. And so if you're just in DeFi coins or you're just in majors like Bitcoin, ETH, and Solana, you're underperforming relative to meme coins. Now,
will that last? Will that overperformance of meme coins last? Because one of my theories is that we were running in the meme coins because nothing else was running. And so we were looking for dopamine. And so we, you know, like the market moved sideways for 7 months. For 7 months, we were between 50,000 and 70,000. And so we went to look for dopamine because quality wasn't moving. But now there's a slight movement in quality. So do we keep the meme coin run? Are we all addicted to meme coins? And this is like the biggest craze ever?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it in a pretty different way, right? So one is meme coins are a form of speculation and gambling. It's kind of like a lottery ticket in a lot of cases, right? Until something becomes $1 billion plus market cap, which I qualify as a blue chip meme coin, these are all just PvP video game players, you know, trying to out trade the other person on the 20 or 30,000 tokens that are created every single day on Solana. Okay. Now, within that, Pump.Fun has generated, you know, well over $150 million in revenue in an incredibly short amount of time. However, there is a token associated with a project that I think has a ton of potential because it is Pump.Fun plus Radium in one project itself, where it distributes 95% of the revenue to token holders. Whereas Pump.Fun, they keep all that revenue, and because God bless, they built an amazing application, right? So the project is called FOMO3D. I've looked into it. I've spoken with the devs that are associated with the project. These are cracked developers that are, you know, actually that one of the guys that took over the lead of the project did the smart contract audit for Radium, which is effectively Uniswap for Solana.
Is the FOMO token live?
Yeah, yeah. Trades now. I'm a holder, full disclosure, but like, I looked into the project, all of the code is open source, which I'm a huge advocate of. And furthermore, they're moving the governance of the project, not into a DAO, but into a futarchy, which is a markets driven form of governance. And open source plus futarchy, I think, is going to be a trend you're going to see over the course of the coming years for how open source decentralized projects actually launch and also ultimately sustain themselves is going to be through a futarchy governance model.
What's the token symbol?
Literally FOMO, the number 3D, FOMO3D. It's okay. Tiny market cap, right? Like this is one of these, you know, super binary outcomes where it's either worth $1 zillion or zero, right? But if you look at the success of Pump.Fun, they're generating, you know, tens of millions of dollars a month in revenue and keeping it for themselves. Now imagine that was distributed to token holders, right? Like, who wouldn't want to be a part of that? Because if you look at the activity, if you look at the activity on Pump.Fun on a daily basis, it's not slowing down. And so the notion that like people are going to stop gambling and speculating is nonsense. People have been gambling and speculating since humans have been on this planet. That's not going to change. In fact, in the United States, the compound annual growth rate of people gambling on sports is up triple digits every year since 2020 when they deregulated in 34 states in the country sports betting. So this is just another form of that, in my opinion, but it's global and it's attached with internet culture. So we're actually programmatically tokenizing internet culture through meme coins. I don't think this stuff slows down. 99.9% of them are not going to make any money, just like buying a lottery ticket. But the ones that actually do will create fortunes for people. And you've already seen this today, right? People that bought Popcat and Whiff and Mudang and all of these bizarre meme coins, people have made loads of money off of, and people want to be the next guy to do that, right? They see the headline, the media loves to cover this stuff because it drives traffic to their sites, and then people think, oh, just like the school bus driver that won the lottery ticket, yeah, that could be me. It's the same thing with somebody buying a microcap coin that's going to actually end up, you know, $1 billion market cap and they make a fortune. So I don't think that's slowing down. In addition to that, you know, Rand, we talked about this when I was in Singapore. Mother token, Iggy's token, the project that she's working on, you know, the casino Motherland is coming online next month. There's a ton of really cool, unique capabilities and features that are being added to it that is unlike any other online casino today that I think is really going to change the game. And of course, the Mother token is integrated into that, but she's also integrating it into loads of her other businesses that she's involved in. And so I still believe that, you know, Iggy to date is arguably the best kind of celebrity that's been involved in a meme coin, because she's creating a brand around this thing, Mother. It's not called Iggy, it's called Mother. And that aspect kind of blends and integrates into myriad of other things. So if you want full VGen exposure, I like things like Mother. I like things like FOMO3D. And I do like some of the agentic AI coins that are also out there today.
So talking about the agentic AI, because I mean, for me, I like the narrative. I just think, I don't know. I'm not convinced. I think it's one of these narratives that's not going to stick.
Like, think about it this way, Rand. Think about it this way, right? So today, if a human being, and especially if they're an American, launches a meme coin, there is a non-zero risk associated with, say, the SEC or some regulatory agency coming after them.
Yes.
How does a regulatory agency come after an agentic AI that launches a meme coin? They can't. It's a piece of software that's running. And it's just tweeting about it and doing whatever. And so I think we're like at the very beginning of how weird and crazy this stuff's going to actually get. And do I think agentic AIs are all going to launch meme coins? No. But on a permissionless network with something that is a piece of software operating like it's a human being that is outside the bounds of any regulatory constraints, this is going to get crazy. And so the beginning of this is just now. I don't know where it's going, to be super clear, but I'm tracking
it. Would you ape into GOAT at a 50 million market cap?
No, I like the AI 16Z coin. So this is a really cool project. They've got a bunch of open source code. It's another, you know, it's not financial advice at all, yeah, because these are all incredibly highly risky tokens. But the project is fascinating to me. And the fact that anybody can participate by creating sort of their own agentic AI using the open source code that was released for this AI 16Z, I think is actually a pretty compelling reason to track it, if not actually be involved in it.
Okay. So, I mean, okay. So it seems like you're pretty heavy DGen memes. So DGen memes, when I say DGen meme, pump.fan, AI agent type coins. You're obviously long Sol and you're long celebrity coins. What else are you looking at? So like you're broken up into Bitcoin, Sol, AI agent coins. Just before we go there, Joey, what do you think of these AI agent coins? Passing fad or the future of meme coins?
I'm relative to other meme coins. I'm kind of less excited about the AI agent stuff. I think like, I do think AI agents will use crypto like long term at scale. By my views, they're sort of more of a short lived meme than something that kind of has more staying power. That said, writ large, I am relatively bullish on memes this cycle. And you know, as you said, I'm
can't believe it. You know,
you expect to say that.
I can't believe I speak to you guys. Last week I spoke to Santiago, and I'm like these are the most serious investors that I've come across. And the most serious investors in the world, and their share of mind in the most sophisticated crypto investors in the world is majority in memes. It is unbelievable. I think, you know, like we've created a new, completely new casino game, which has the chance to be bigger than any casino in the world. Like it's absolutely mind blowing. Joe, okay, so we spoke about the categories here, and give us some more gems. You know, Joey pulled his pants down, bro. Joey just like took.
So, look, I mean, I, again, I'm talking my book here because these are the things I have conviction in.
That's what you're buying, bro. That's what you're buying.
Yeah. So look, on the Solana side, I think Jito is dramatically undervalued. They recently, I think it was about a week ago, I tweeted about it. They were the second highest revenue generating piece of crypto, period. So more than Bitcoin, more than Ethereum's fees, more than stablecoin fees, they were number two. And their economic value is continuing to hit all-time highs. Moreover, Jito is also launching, has just recently launched a restaking service. So if you look at something like, you know, Lido, Flashbots, and Eigenlayer, what are the combined fully diluted valuations of those three, you know, services? In the tens of billions.
Tens of billions.
Jito is single-digit billions, and they do all those things on Solana and also are generating enormous amounts of economic value on chain. I just think it's criminally undervalued. So, you know, we're big Jito bulls.
When did you start aping Jito? Just for our viewers, were you early investors in private rounds, or were you market buyers at prices similar to where we are today?
Both. So we did, of course, do the private round. I know the founders extremely well. And when they were talking about doing a private round, I absolutely got a large slug into that because I was convinced that these guys are going to be probably the most important protocol on Solana. Thus far, that thesis has played out to be true. But that was on the VC side because, you know, we have a VC fund as well. On the hedge fund side, we've definitely been owning it and adding to positions on every pullback because we still have the fundamental view that they're radically undervalued compared to their peers that are on Ethereum. So I think, you know, Jito is another one that I think is just criminally undervalued. But we also kind of have, you know, I don't want to say it's like a hedge against Solana, but we are investors in Say, which is a high performance, high throughput L1 that's designed specifically for trading. We did that private round out of the venture fund and have also been long it from, I think, a lot lower than where it is now on the hedge fund side. Say's challenge right now is that it's competing with Mindshare with other, you know, kind of alternative high throughput L1s like Sui and Aptos. But I do believe that there's a path for them if they can figure out how to incentivize liquidity to be brought onto their chain and people actually trading it, that Say as its token is also dramatically undervalued.
So look, I must be honest, full disclosure, I did take a big position in Say this week. And just why? Because I think that soon there's going to be the Monad trade. And I think when that comes on, it becomes, you know, a big narrative. I also think that this one is maybe slightly undervalued where it is now. You can see that it's, you know, that. But also, look, we're also in from much, much, much earlier. So, you know, it's a combination of we're averaging up here, but we just think that this could be one of the other bets. All right, Joe, I'm going to give you guys one more each, and then I'm going to let you guys go. And I must say, I've loved this part of it. I really have. This has been my favorite part. I've got you guys to open up a little bit. Joey, one more from you, sir. And then Joe, I'm coming to you. One more from you, sir. And I mean, the front runners here are loving this. The front runners here are loving this.
Awesome. Let's see. Yeah. I mean, I'm on my end. Let's see. I guess at a macro level, I think one thing, you know, one prediction I'll make is, like, I think, you know, meme coin dominance probably gets to like 5% of the market cap this cycle, something like that. I forget the exact stat, but I checked, you know, a few weeks back and we're actually well below where we were last cycle. And then kind of just like anecdotally from a narrative standpoint, it feels like that narrative has more power than it did last cycle. So it feels like it tops out higher there.
Let me give you a stat. The total market cap of all the memes, and I say all the memes, I'm excluding all the rats and mice, the pump.fun rats and mice. I'm talking to you about real memes, is 1/6 of the total market cap of the total NFTs at the top of the cycle, last cycle. And if you take into account that memes are the new NFTs, because NFTs pretty much are non-existent in the cycle, and you take into account that the whole market has moved up significantly from where we were last cycle, then you can kind of say that memes have a long, long, long way to go if they are to replace NFTs. I think that memes theoretically could be bigger. Why? Because NFTs were exclusive and NFTs were quite difficult to own. When I say difficult to own, it was different to buying a bunch of shitcoins in your wallet and just leaving them in dust. You had to go to a different type of exchange and it was like, it just felt like a much more complicated and much more exclusive, excluding people process. Whereas meme coins is like for everyone. So with that in mind, the fact that you're saying that memes can go up, so one more call that's for something that's in your portfolio. Give us one more or in your portfolio or that you're looking at or that you think is good.
Yeah, I think one more Let's see. Yeah, one more thing I own a good amount of. We also invested in their private fundraise at Founders Fund, but there is actually on the NFT subject one NFT group that I'm bullish on, which is
Pudgy
Pudgy
Penguins.
Penguins.
Pudgy Penguins. Yes, sir. Pudgy Penguins. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're also investors in the round, and we love the Pudgy Penguins round. The L2 chain, the L2, the Pudgy Penguins L2 chain, right?
Yeah, and the thing that's cool about them is they have real world distribution. Like, you know, most often crypto, with a handful of exceptions, you know, it's mostly just crypto natives. But they have like every like Walmart, Walgreens, Target, like even like the Walmarts I've been to in like San Juan, Puerto Rico, like they have Pudgy Penguins like on the end shelf space, which is like it's like interesting. And so yeah, I like those guys.
All right, Joe, over to you, sir.
Sure, I got a couple for you. So, and these are actually, you know, Ethereum or Ethereum adjacent, right? So I don't own any Ether. I don't have any plans on owning any Ether anytime soon. But this is another deal that we did out of the private round that we also own in the hedge fund, and it's XPopulous. XAI is the ticker. They're effectively a, you
layer
know, call
three.
It
a yeah, layer three on Arbitrum, specifically around gaming.
That's right. And so these guys had the number one video game on Steam a couple weeks ago, I believe. I just think that like the team is lights out. The tech is very, very good. So if you're, you know, if you want video game related exposure, which we do, we really like that play because yes, it is technically infrastructure, but games are being built and shipped on top of XPopulous at a rapid pace. And so if there is actually an uptick in that beaten up sector, which is video games, I think that, you know, XAI is probably something worth owning.
So off the grid is launching before the end of the year, and that's probably one of the best games that is out there. And I think that that may bring a spotlight onto gaming. And then my bet was around Beam, but Beam has a much higher valuation. I'm now thinking Beam's a layer, a subnet on, I think it's a subnet on Avalanche. This actually may be a very, very good play that's actually been a little bit off my radar for a while, but probably a good time to be getting into it. You were saying,
yeah, and by the way, the team that built it is Offchain Labs. It's the same team that built Arbitrum. So, you know, you can have a level of, I guess, trust in the quality of the actual infrastructure itself because it was built by Offchain Labs. The second one that I'll give you that's also Ethereum adjacent, I did this as an angel investor years ago, is Neon. And so Neon enables folks to basically, you know, execute smart contracts on Ethereum utilizing Solana's, you know, high throughput settlement, et cetera. This is a little bit trickier because this implies that folks are going to be wanting to utilize something like Neon to execute smart contracts from Ethereum in the Solana environment. But if that actually starts to pick up, I think that Neon is also pretty undervalued.
Okay. Amazing. Listen, guys, I must say, this has been one of my favorite show with both of you guys. So I've met you both personally. I've had you guys both on multiple shows. I think this has been the one that I've absolutely enjoyed the most. So again, much love to both of you. Joey, Joe, much love. Joe McCann, thank you so much for staying behind and chatting to our Discord group, our front runners, which are actually all watching this live. So much love to you guys. And to you guys at the Banter Fam, much love to you. Now, listen, there are more shows coming this weekend. There's the meme show on Sunday. There's a whole lot of shows coming. So subscribe to the channel and put your notifications on because there's a lot coming up because of all the stuff, all the hard work that we're doing. I will see you guys all again tomorrow. Until then, trade well, my friends.